Welcome to Saints History, told and experienced the way God intended it, with excessive amounts of alcohol and cursing. The booze is probably bourbon because...
Other alcohols are for rich women on diets.
Now, here's your drunk Saints History host, who is...
bombed out of his gourd.
All right, everybody, welcome to another episode of Drunk Saints History. I'm your host, Ralph Marlborough. I'm going to be honest, this episode, I'm like 5 beers in. I just did a shot between the tapings of Tin Cup, so I am really, really drunk on the back end of this. This is a second taping with a patron who donated $25, Jim Grimsley. He donated $25, and if you donate $25 for 4 months, you get in the raffle. Jim did it. He won. And you get your own 2 episodes of Drunk Saints History. You pick the topics with my assistants, and we chat, and we bullshit, and me and Jim have been doing it. We've gone way over time. I appreciate Jim. I told him I would only need him for 30 minutes. We've been doing it for like 40. So, Jim, I appreciate it. And tell the people what you're drinking. I'm drinking Bud Light, and I've mixed it with brown liquor, and that's going to end badly for me in about 45 minutes. But what are you drinking tonight?
Ralph, before we get to what I'm drinking, I'm a little upset the fact that the reason you picked me was because of my money and not because of my sparkling personality. So I'm a little pissed about that.
Well, listen, you got to have the money to get into the raffle. So I didn't know about your beautiful personality until we chatted tonight. Before that, you were just a dollar sign, right?
Yeah. So you just treat me like a dollar sign. That's what you're doing, Ralph. Okay.
Hey, I've been generous. But this drunk history thing. We did this. We started this. This is the third year of it. We started it, ironically, because the computer that I had for the show, I don't have a sound effect of my wife's cat. You know, I have this sound effect.
My wife.
But my wife's cat destroyed the laptop, and I got it repaired, but it was still clunk. It was still crap. And I told people on the show, I was like, if you people will donate, I think it was like, I was like, I need $800 for a laptop. If you people just donate enough to get me the laptop, I'll get drunk every month, and I will do a Drunk Saints History. And we had a great response, and a woman, Stephanie, she actually donated the last couple $100 to get us over the line. It was more than that, maybe. It's because it's so long ago. But she got us over the line, and people loved it. So I was like, this is great. I'll do it every year, and that way I'll just have like a reserve fund in case we have technical issues. But that's how it started, and now we've done all the big topics, but now we do it like the micro topics. Me and you did Saint on a previous episode that people have heard, Saints player that we thought were going to be awesome that they drafted that ended up being flops. But this episode is just going to be as good. This episode, we're talking Bobby Hebert. And Bobby Hebert, Jim, he has so many layers. I want you to tell the story that I had forgotten about until you mentioned it, that everybody knew that he was in the NFL, USFL, and they won a championship. He won a championship with the Michigan Panthers in the USFL, and he's still very proud of that. And well, he should be. A championship is a championship. But he was not a minor player in the USFL. He was a big name, and you know, the Saints, Benson had just bought the team. Tell the people the story that you found, and I totally forgot, about Edwin Edwards making the pitch to Bobby Hebert to sign with the Saints.
Well, a lot of people forget the fact that back in 1984, the Saints were, Meekham was looking to sell the Saints.
Yeah.
And the rumor was they were going to be sold to somebody who was going to move them to Jacksonville.
They visited. Meekham and Bum Phillips flew to Jacksonville and, like, took a tour of the stadium. I remember that. I was a very little kid. It was very dramatic. It was the lead on the news.
So they were going to do that. And so Edwards, being Edwin Edwards, got involved. And a Louisiana state senator called Bobby Hebert. And Hebert was visiting with Seattle, and he was expecting to sign with Seattle. after the USFL had folded, and the senator called Hebert and said, "Hey, Edwin Edwards is going to call you. Take his call." And sure enough, Edwards calls, says, "Look, Benson's going to buy the Saints," and then he bought them. And he says, "We want you to play for New Orleans." And then sure enough, he told Benson to sign Hebert, and that's what he did. And that's how Hebert ended up with the New Orleans Saints.
You know, and
because
that's
of Edwards and the politics.
And that's a good point. You know, he brought in Bobby Hebert. You know, they brought Bobby Hebert in before they even they brought in Jim Finks and Jim Mora. So like Bobby Hebert was pre that decision. You know, Bobby Hebert was a quarterback for the Saints in 85, you know?
Yep.
Which was pre Mora.
He was on the roster from 85 and 86, and he really started playing in 87, but he was there for 85 and 86.
Yeah, I mean, in 86 he broke his foot, but 85, you know, he was bums last year, and Wade was interim coach for a little bit. But that's the thing, right? That was part of the story of Hebert going forward. It was a lot of animosity with him and Finks because he wasn't Finks' guy. You know, he wasn't.
Yeah.
So Finks really had no loyalty to him, and that was just the way the NFL was back then. You know, I said it in a piece that I wrote for Channel 4 when I did an oral history of it, when I talked to Bobby Hebert and I talked to Mike Dettillier. You know, Mike Dettillier just explained it. Jim Finks, he believed that in the 80s and 90s, you built your team sort of backwards of how you do it now. Right in 2019, it's you got to find a franchise quarterback. You get the franchise quarterback on the low rookie salary. You have a ton of salary cap space, and you build your team around the quarterback. In the 70s and 80s, the feeling was you can build your team, and you slide the quarterback in as the final piece, you know? So it was interesting.
That's what Finks did when he was – with Minnesota.
Yeah.
Remember the whole Joe Capp deal? He had Joe Capp that took him to the Super Bowl.
Let him go to Canada. Like he was like, you want to make $85,000 a year, Joe Capp? That's crazy. Go to Canada.
And then he let Capp go, and then he brought Fran Tarkenton in and stuff like that. So he was always very tough on paying quarterbacks a lot of money. There's no doubt about that.
Well, I mean, that was just, I mean, the NFL, you know, in those days, man, they treated players like, Tex Schramm literally said, like, players are like cattle. I can get more cattle. Like, they didn't treat players worth a damn, and they didn't have free agency. The players had no leverage. You know, the thing about Bobby Hebert, I think, that's interesting with him is he never threw more than 20 touchdowns with the Saints, and that dude, even in the 80s and 90s, when interceptions and turnovers weren't viewed as big of a problem as they are now, you know, because it was always like throwing was sort of this weird sort of mystical thing that teams had. They only did it a lot when they had to, so quarterbacks' interceptions weren't viewed as a giant bugaboo. But even for that, like, dude, Hebert threw a lot of picks. Like, he never threw more than 20 touchdowns, and he threw 15 interceptions in back-to-back years with the Saints in 88 and 89. Like,
yeah, he was kind of almost a one-for-one. He was always better than – he had more touchdowns than interceptions, but he was still never had quite that kind of breakout year. But, you know, to set the context for Bobby Hebert, you have to realize the Saints were horrible for 20 years, right?
Yeah.
So in 87, when he actually became the legitimate starter, you know, before that, we had terrible coaches. We had Fears. We had J.D. Roberts, John North,
yeah,
Hank Stram. We had terrible drafts, which we talked about on another podcast. And think about the quarterbacks we had. Gary Wood, Gary Quazzo. We had Kilmer, who the city liked, but he wasn't a great quarterback. Ronnie Lee Smith. We had Manning, who I loved, Archie Manning, but he never had a team around him. And then we had Bobby Douglas, Dave Wilson,
Stabler.
Todd. Yeah. Think about all those guys. So finally, Bobby Hebert shows up, and in 87, you know, it was a replacement year and all those things. But the Saints go 12-3. That was kind of a magical year for the Saints. We had a winning season. We actually won something. It was a spectacular year.
And also, too, you know, it's so long ago now. It's just sort of, it's, you know, once you get, I find in the internet age, once you get 10, 12 years out, like it just, it almost might as well be, you know, 32 years ago, it might as well be World War One. You know, I mean, it's like, I love it, and I love Saints history, and I love.
You're making me feel old here, Ralph.
I'm old. I'm old. I write my Channel 4 columns now, Jim, and I purposely try not to make many references about the Saints pre-2006 because it's 13 years ago, and you know. So, you know, people just, like, there's a whole generation. I'm 43, and my recollections of the Saints, for all the talk of, oh, the Saints have had this terrible history and this and that, not really. Since Benson's bought the team, the Saints have either been a playoff team or mediocre. They don't have many disastrous years, right? The last year of Mora was a disaster. The last year of Ditka was a disaster. And the Katrina year was a disaster. But that's about it. The rest of the time, they're either mediocre or they're good. Like, so we haven't really suffered that much. But pre-87, man, you would argue the same. I could tell you the Saints are the worst organization in sports.
I had season tickets in 79, and, you know, we watched Archie Manning, and like I said, I loved Archie Manning, and you had Galbraith and Muncy, and, you know, you thought, well, we finally turned a corner, and we really hadn't. But then we went through the Aints years with the bags on our heads. And then I still remember, and I remember a couple of weeks ago you were talking about this, but, you know, I got transferred to Chicago, and my brother-in-law used to send me VHS tapes of the Saints games every week. Okay.
Andrew did that when Andrew lived in France.
I used to wait for Wednesday evenings because I would get on Wednesday evenings, I'd get a VHS tape and I knew the score and I knew we had gotten beaten by 25 points.
And you watched anyway. That's dedication.
And I watched it because I was looking for the bright spot. Right, because somewhere there was a bright spot of something positive that was going to happen. Okay, and that's what the Saints fans pre-1987 and pre-Benson went through, is we looked for anything that was a bright spot because we had very few of them.
I remember as a kid in 1987, I was 11. And you know, it was sort of devolved away from Bobby Hebert, but we'll get back to that. But in 87, man, the Saints, they were coming off a 7-9, and 7-9 for the Saints was their second best season ever, besides 8-8. Right? There was real optimism about the Saints because it felt like the Saints with Benson, you know, for all the things of the criticisms of Benson that I think weren't necessarily fair about him being cheap and he ran it like a business and all, and that sort of when the Saints sort of lost in the mid after Mora left and Ditka and that sort of thing, the criticisms of him, I think they were kind of unfair. But at the beginning, when Benson bought the team and was like, I'm going to run this like a business, the media and all the fans were like, thank fucking God. We don't have to deal with Meekum treating it like a toy, and Benson's going to run it like a business, and it'll be professional, and maybe that'll help them. And you know, he hired Jim Finks and Jim Mora, and say what you want about them. They were competent. But the thing that's amazing about 1987 that I think gets lost to the history books because Jim Mora didn't win any playoff games and Abraham and that sort of thing, the Saints in 87 went 12-3, and they had a quarterback who was a Cajun. Their number one wide receiver was from LSU, Eric Martin, and their number two running back, who had 800-something yards, was Dalton Hilliard. Like, not only did the Saints win, but it was infused with local players all over the roster. Like, that made it really, really fun.
Well, the whole Eric Martin deal, and you know, the local boy makes good with Bobby Hebert was just spectacular. It really, really was. And you know, and the thing I liked about Bobby Hebert, one, he did have a cannon for an arm. He had a great arm. He was spectacular from that perspective. But you know, he was brash. He was cocky. You know, he brought a different kind of image to the Saints that we really hadn't had. I mean, because we'd been beaten up for 20 years. There was no cockiness about the Saints. And he actually had some. Now, maybe there wasn't any reason to be cocky after the years we had had, but he actually brought some of that to the Saints.
No, he had – Bobby Hebert, when he played, he had swagger and a toughness. He played a game – I forget what year it was – where he played a game in Tampa, and he got knocked out of the game because of a concussion. And that was back when – a player would get a concussion, you'd be like, oh, thank God, it's just a concussion, and he didn't blow out a knee or break his leg or anything, because we didn't know anything about concussions. And he got a concussion and got like four teeth knocked out, and the Saints, they had to put in, I forget who it was at quarterback, and they got hurt. I think it might have been Dave Wilson or whoever the backup was, and Bobby Hebert had to come back in and take more of a beating. And the Saints ended up losing, you know. But, like, that's how tough he was. Like, you could say he wasn't that good, and he wasn't. But he was tough. And Bobby Hebert carried himself like a fucking championship quarterback, even though he was kind of Jay Cutler-esque quality to him. But he carried himself like a swashbuckling son of a bitch.
Yeah, he would have great games and he would have bad games, and you know, and that's what it was. But the other thing was, he was also supported by the Dome Patrol, so that actually helped him. You know, we go back to the idea that he threw a lot of touchdowns, we threw a lot of interceptions. He had a great defense with the Dome Patrol, with Swilling and Jackson and Mills, Vaughn Johnson. They helped him out a lot. But at the same time, he was what we needed. But he never really had, you know, he had Reuben Mays, he had Dalton Hilliard, he had a bunch of good running backs. But like I said, he had Eric Martin, who ran a 4.7 40 as his best wide receiver. You know, he just didn't have the real targets to throw the ball to, because he had a great arm.
Yeah, my favorite Bobby Hebert memory of all of them, you know, he doesn't have the good playoff games and all this, but my favorite Bobby Hebert memory is 1991. He hurt his shoulder, and the Saints were 8-1, and he missed a month, and the Saints lost them all. And it wasn't just because of Bobby Hebert being injured. The defense sort of slumped in those. And those won, and they just lost a bunch of like heartbreaker games. Like they lost to Atlanta 23-20. They lost to San Francisco 38-24, where they had a turnover and a touchdown at the end to make the score closer. They went to Dallas, lost, and they came home on Monday night, and they were playing the Raiders, and the Raiders now are a joke. And I know there's a generation of you out there that are like, the Raiders are a joke. They're John Gruden. They're Tales from the Crypt, Al Davis, who died a few years ago. Like, they've never – the Raiders, since they went to the Super Bowl in the early 2000s, they haven't been good, and they weren't good before that. But I'm here to tell you, man, in the 70s, 80s, and early 90s, the team that kicked – everyone's ass on Monday Night Football was the Raiders. Like, you played the Raiders on Monday night. You feared them. They played the Saints in 79. The Saints were up 35-14 and lost at home to the Raiders. Like, the Raiders were the kings of Monday night. Like, they won, like, 70-something percent of their games. And I remember it was like, the Saints are in a tailspin, and they're playing the Raiders on Monday night. We are dead. And Bobby Hebert came back, threw for 320 yards, and the Saints crushed them 27-0. And I just remember it just being euphoric in that stadium.
Ralph, why did you have to bring up the 79 Raiders game? Because I was there. I sat there as the Raiders came back and scored like 28 unanswered points against the Saints. And Chuck Muncy fumbled to turn the game over to the Raiders. I really appreciate that, Ralph.
Yeah, and I have to say, though, if you want to just burn time, Google Saints 1979 Raiders and watch the national anthem. Al Hurt played the national anthem, and it's just magnificent. His playing of the trumpet is, but the thing that really makes it great is as he's playing the national anthem, they show the close up of the players. Ken Stabler looks like he literally woke up 15 minutes before the game started and got out of a box on Bourbon Street and came to the game. Like, so do that at Google, YouTube, Google it or find on YouTube Saints Raiders 1979. The national anthem is amazing. You can even Google, I did a Who Dat history for Canal Street Chronicles back in the day. I watched that game because I have the entire 79 season on DVD. So I watched that game and did color commentary of it. It's fantastic. So, but the Raiders, am I right though? The Raiders were like Monday Night Kings.
Oh yeah. I mean, the Raiders, they just kind of dominated that whole era. And that's why, as I was sitting there, and I still remember we'd gone to Mr. B's Bistro for dinner before, and then we went to the game, and I'm sitting there and we're ahead by 28 points or whatever it was, 21 points. And I'm thinking, this is the most unbelievable night of my life. And then 20 minutes later, I say, this is the most unbelievable night of my life as we lose the game. I mean, yeah. It was friggin' unbelievable as we did that.
Yeah. I mean,
well,
go ahead.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I mean, that's the Saints, man. And the thing is, it's really, it's so hard to be, people don't want to be, Archie Manning is this myth wrapped up in a legend, because, you say, well, the Saints were awful and they wasted his entire career, which is true. And by the way, Google Archie Manning, Paul Zimmerman for Sports Illustrated. He did a feature in like 1982 on Archie Manning. It's fantastic. And it goes through all the fuck ups of the Saints during the Archie Manning years. And it's just a perfectly written piece. And it's worth like 40 minutes of your time if you're interested in Saints history and that sort of thing. But the fact of the matter is, because the Saints were so bad, Archie didn't have playoff games or big games to judge him on, but man, that second half against Oakland, Archie was pretty fucking terrible. Like, he was like 2 of 12, and the Saints offense just totally couldn't get anything going, and that's just how it goes. But as we talk about Bobby Hebert, like, it's the complete role reversal, right, Jim? In 91, like, Bobby is like, I am back. I am the quarterback of the team. All is well. And it was, man. He got it done, and they won that division. And I have to say, like, he was the main catalyst. If he'd have been out those last 2 weeks, I'm not sure the Saints would have won that division in 91.
No. Bobby Hebert, he not only had a great arm, but he had the fire. And when you read articles about what the Saints player said about Hebert with regards to like the holdout and stuff, the players were all in Hebert's camp. And that's one of the interesting things about the whole holdout deal is when, you know, as a fan, and, you know, when I put myself back in those years, I was kind of in the Jim Finks camp, right? You know, because if you, you know, you're thinking, well, what's good for the team, blah, 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 and all that kind of stuff. And then in retrospect, you look back and you read what the players said, you know, and you look at the way the league has developed. You know, he was right. He deserved more money. He wasn't being offered the right amount of money. And, you know, he should have, you know, holding out was the right thing for him to do. But in the near term, it cost him money. But then when the judge and the whole – and he joined the NFL class action suit, you know, he ended up making a lot more money because he became a participant in the suit.
Yeah. Well, and
that was the right thing to do because Finks was trying to replay the Joe Capp situation.
Well, here's the thing, too, with Bobby Hebert is, you know, the whole thing in his holdout in 1990, the whole thing that complicated it was the Saints went in a tailspin in 89 at the end because they lost to the Rams on a Sunday night, and it just put them in a tailspin, and their offense was a mess. And they benched Bobby Hebert to try to spark it up or whatever. And they put Fourcade in. And Fourcade was magical for 3 weeks, right?
Oh, and 3 weeks. He was unbelievable.
He was unbelievable. And that sort of changed the calculus in that Fourcade was even more local than Bobby because Fourcade was from New Orleans and had played at Ole Miss. And he was, and you know, that offseason he was a Grand Marshal and Endymion. And it was, you know, so Saints fans were like, whatever, Bobby, hold out. We don't need you. We got Fourcade.
The most important thing was he was from my alma mater, Archbishop Shaw.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that changed everything, right? Saints fans were like, we don't need Bobby. Hold out. We don't need you. We have Fourcade. And to me, one of the critical things in the Jim Mora era was if Fourcade just would have been terrible those 3 weeks, I think the Saints would have begrudgingly signed Hebert and moved along.
One of the biggest issues that Jim Finks, and I do like him because I think he put the Saints on the right track. But one of the biggest issues became kind of the hard-headedness that he had trying to play the tough guy with Bobby Hebert.
The fact
that he ended up the next year when Hebert was holding out making – you know, trading a first, second, and third round draft choice to get Steve Walsh, that killed the Saints. If you could have taken those draft choices and gotten a wide receiver and a cornerback to go with Bobby Hebert, you know, we were online to actually do some good things.
Here's one of my favorite what if questions, and Mike Dettillier told me this when I did the oral history. And by the way, not to toot my own horn, but it's probably my most favorite thing I've ever done at WWL. Google it. You can find it. It's amazing. It's two parts. It's long, but it's great. But here's something that Mike Dettillier told me that is just, it's probably its own drunk history what if podcast that I'll have to do at some point with Andrew or maybe someone. The Raiders wanted Bobby Hebert. They always did. Al Davis always wanted him. Al Davis offered the Saints a number 2 draft pick, second round pick, and Marcus Allen, who, remember, at the time, Marcus Allen had been rotting on the Raiders bench because Al Davis just got in a snit with him and just was like, don't play him. And Marcus Allen would go on to go to Kansas City and score about 60 more touchdowns and rush for about 6,000 more yards. So, you know, the greatest thing about Marcus Allen was, if he had gone to the Saints, how good would he have been, and would it have changed the Saints, would it have changed their outlook? You know, would they have been able to win a couple of playoff games with Marcus Allen? You know,
yeah, because he was still good even after he turned 30. He was good till he was 34 or 35 years old. And, yeah, that was, you know, to not make a move either to pay Hebert what he deserved or to turn around and trade him and then get something for him, that made no sense. And then, yeah. And then in addition to that, to turn around and give three draft choices, get Steve Walsh,
yeah.
Who Jimmy Johnson, if you ever read about him, he knew right away after he drafted Steve Walsh and had Aikman that he didn't want Walsh, but he just kept building him up so he could trade him. And
I mean, Grant, you know, he was 33, 30. I mean, he ran for 700, 700, 800 yards with Kansas City. Now, granted, he kind of split carries, but I mean, he was awesome at the goal line and scored 44 touchdowns. I mean, that would have been a great what if. Would you have rather have Marcus Allen, a second-round pick, and all those other draft picks and not a quarterback and what the Saints would have done at quarterback in that situation or what they did? I mean, I just think it, Jim, it would have been amazingly interesting. But that's the thing with Bobby Hebert. He has his career has all these great forks and what ifs with the Saints. You know, maybe what if he, like you said at the beginning, what if he'd have gone to Seattle? What if you know? What if the Saints would have Jim Finks would have shipped him out? What if you know 4K had no? What if 4K had a bomb? Like, there's all these what ifs with the Jim Mora Saints, and they all sort of, if you had like a pie chart, or not a pie chart, but like a flow chart, it all sort of leads back to what happened with Bobby Hebert, as to why this sort of why things went the way they did under Jim Mora. And of course his ending, Jim, he's back and he's the drive time host and he's, you know, Mr. Saints football and he sort of replaced Buddy D and all that. But man, when he left to Atlanta, he was fucking hated. And I will say I hated him when he did his little Falcon fly away nonsense.
When I saw that, cause I have to admit, I totally got when he went to the Falcons, I didn't like it at all. But I totally got it, right? But when he threw the touchdown pass and he did his little Falcon flyaway thing, I just threw up in my mouth. I really did, and it just drove me crazy. But you know, the fact is, you know, all you have to do is look at the Bobby Hebert thing, and I think it was when they were playing the Steelers when he was announcing, when they tried to kick him out of the booth because of his shenanigans when we stopped him four times inside the 5-yard line. You know, you look at that, and today I actually watched something. It was the Saints Super Bowl parade. And they showed Bobby Hebert in a dress in the parade.
Oh yeah, you know, he did the Buddy D.
Yeah,
Buddy D
wear a dress. Of Buddy D. And you know, that epitomizes New Orleans Saints football, right? And that's why you gotta love Bobby Hebert.
Yeah, I mean the thing is too, Bobby Hebert, man, if he was the quarterback of, I mean, it's hard to judge it because with Sean Payton and all, but if he was just the quarterback of the Saints today with analytics and everything, my God, there would be blood in the streets on social media and Twitter, Jim. Because the thing is, right, you would have the Saints with this great defense, right, winning, and you would have Bobby Hebert, the quarterback of the team, and they're winning, right? But his stats would be terrible. Like, he'd have all these interceptions, and you know, his yards per attempt were pretty terrible. Like, he never averaged more than 7 yards per attempt, which is
people like me going, yeah, but I've got a four. I got a my best receiver runs a 4.7 40. Okay, get me a receiver that can catch the ball at downfield. I mean, that's that, you know, and we haven't even begun to mention Carl Smith.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And Carl Smith was so tied to Jim Mora, and I love Jim Mora because, like I said, Jim Mora and Steve Sidwell and Finks and Benson changed the dynamics and the trajectory of the Saints. But I you know, I don't know whether it was Carl Smith, and I think it was more Jim Mora just being conservative. We had, I mean, with Reuben Mays and Dalton Hilliard and people like that, we could have done so much more from an offensive standpoint.
You know,
the thing is
with the Saints, and this is a history point that I've made on the podcast a bunch of times, is the room is spinning now. I drank too much. but, yeah, the thing is for everybody on this podcast, I can't get sloppy drunk at the beginning of the podcast because I have to run everything, right? So because I have to be able to run sound effects like this.
It's not a lie if you believe it.
Like, I have to be able to run the soundboard and make sure it records, so I can't get totally just plowed at the beginning. But now that me and Jim are rapping...
You're so good at that. You're so good at that, Ralph.
So, but now we're near the end of the second episode, and we've gone way over time, so now it's just completely falling apart on me. But the thing about with Bobby Hebert was that 87 team was probably the best offense he ever had, because Reuben Mays, he was great in 86, he was good in 87, but he was never the same after that, he got hurt. Dalton Hilliard was really good in 89, but they had Barry Word, Reuben Mays, and Dalton Hilliard as their running backs. They had a young Eric Martin. Like, that was probably the best offense that Jim Mora ever had, and it was, I think, their highest scoring team they ever had under Jim Mora, if you go by points per game. And we just didn't realize it at the time until you look back and you're like, oh yeah, in 91 Fred McAfee was their leading rusher, and they won they went 12-4, and they Vaughn Dunbar was their leading rusher, and he had, you know, 500 yards, and you're like, well, so what? But I mean, think about that. The Saints were a defensive first team, and we're like, we're going to play defense, we're going to kick ass on special teams with Morton Anderson, and we're going to run the ball down your throat. Like, that's what they wanted to do. And in 91 and 92, they couldn't even execute the formula because their running backs were so terrible, you know? And that's
so they had 87 and 88. They had the magical formula to try and do something, and they just didn't execute. And I think it came down to just they were missing that big wide receiver to complement Eric Martin.
And
take advantage of Bobby Hebert's arm. I mean, face
it. they never had a. The deep guys they had were like Floyd Turner. And Bobby Hebert always told the story when I you know, because I didn't work with him that much, but after Buddy, late Kenny Wilkerson did it. And Bobby Hebert always told the story to me. He's like, you know, fans would get on me for yelling at the Saints wide receivers. You know, they would get on me for yelling at the wide receivers. But all those wide receivers that I yelled at, Lonzale Hill, Brett Perryman, and the other one, he's like, all those receivers I yelled at on the sideline because they didn't know what they were doing, the next year they were all gone because they were terrible.
Yeah.
And I was like, he's got kind of got a point, you know? But
yeah, I used
Jim,
to get so excited about Lonzale Hill.
Oh, my God.
And I was so disappointed every year.
Brett Perryman went on to Detroit, and they figured out how to use him in the run and shoot, and he was catching 100 balls a year and being really good. I was just like, the Saints were just the late 80, early 90s Saints, man. I should do like a side podcast of those years, and I should just go game by game. But
Ralph, we have to put this call on hold for a second because I've got the Saints NFC 2009 championship game against Minnesota on video, and Brett Favre is limping off the field. So I'm curious to see how this is going to turn out.
Yeah.
So My son and I went to this game. This was one of the highlights of my life. So can we hold off on for this for the next 20 minutes? No, I'm just kidding.
I wonder how it's going to go.
Yeah.
A side note on that before we sign off is, and Jim, I have to say, and I say this to people, and people, they won't believe me, but it's the God's honest, it's the God's honest truth. The Minnesota NFC Championship game was so stressful to me that, and the Saints were so goddamn lucky to win that game. I've never gone back and watched that game from start to finish because that game, like, the Saints won, and full credit to them, but Minnesota just vomited it up. And there's part of me that, like, feels like if I watch it start to finish again, like, the Saints might not win. Because
I've watched this game a number of times, and I remember we got to this game. We'd gone to the French Quarter and, you know, drank and did all that stuff. We went to the game. We stood up for the entire game. Okay. I mean, didn't go anywhere. Didn't go to the bathroom. Didn't do anything. Then we went back to the French Quarter after we won. And it was the most spectacular day imaginable watching that game. And everybody was so happy.
I remember this podcast, it started with Bobby Hebert. It went to the 87, then late 90s Saints, got to the Raiders. Now it's going to the 2009 NFC Championship game. But this is drunk history, people. You never know where we're going to go. So the thing about that game, Jim, that was crazy was I was stone cold sober in that game because I was so sick the night before that I was just hopped up on meds, and euphoria carried me through. But once I kind of like got out of the stadium and walking to the car, like my body was just starting to shut down and was like, what have you done to me? And I was throwing up. People thought I was drunk and about to die, but I wasn't. I just had caught like a bug. But I was like, there was no way I was going to miss that game. It didn't matter that my temperature when I woke up in the morning was 102. Like, it didn't matter. I was like, my mom's like, maybe you should go to the emergency room. I'm like, no. Yes. We're going to this game, you know, but listen, we did Bobby Hebert. I think, Jim, your point about him having swagger, I think that is sort of softened my opinion of him over time. You know, but I still look at him as he never really, his play on the field, except for rare moments like the Monday night game, it never elevated the Saints. So my final thought on him, and I'll give it to you, where do you rank him for Saints quarterbacks?
Well, I would rank him above Drew Brees. No.
Now I know I'm not the only one drunk tonight.
Yeah. No, I mean, you know, I have to tell you, obviously, Drew's number one. In my heart, Archie's going to be number two, whether the stats or anything else. When I think about the pain and suffering Archie went through, Archie deserves to be number two. And because Bobby took us to the next level, which no other quarterback had done, I would put Bobby at number three.
Yeah, I get it. I get people. To me, Aaron Brooks is number two, and it's not even a debate. But my thing is, I understand why people that grew up watching the Saints in the 70s.
Wait, what the fuck did Aaron Brooks ever do, Ralph? I have to ask you that.
Let's list the Saints quarterbacks that have won a playoff game. Drew Brees, Aaron Brooks. That's the list. All right, buddy, that's the list. I'm an Aaron Brooks stan. But my thing is, I understand why people that grew up with the Saints in the 70s, they love Archie Manning and they put him number two. Because if you grew up watching the Saints in the 70s and you don't put Archie Manning number two, it means the entire 1970s watching the Saints was a waste of time. So you have
exactly
to believe
right.
that you have to believe. And that's not an insult. as a fan, you have to hope and believe in something. And Archie Manning was what you hoped and believed in. So if you say, nah, Archie wasn't that good, he's like the third or fourth best quarterback in Saints history. If you grew up in the 70s, that's just like saying you wasted the entire decade. And people can't do that. And if I did that, if I grew up in the 70s, I would feel the same way. So I get the nostalgic attachment to Archie. But Bobby Hebert.
So you're saying I'm right. Right, Ralph?
Probably. I'll give it to you. I'll give it to you as we're drunk on this. But I did an Aaron Brooks podcast, and I will probably do it again. I am the most committed supporter of Aaron Brooks probably on social media of any Saints media slash blogger slash gas bag that there is. And I wear that proudly. But, Jim, thank you so much, guy. I say this sincerely. Of, you know, the fan, me and Andrew talk about this all the time now. We, our podcast, I don't know if we're number one of the most downloaded, although I want to get there just so we can wear the crown and point and laugh at everyone else. It's not about even money or views. I just want to be number one so we can say we're the king and lord over people. But I will say our listeners are the best and most loyal. And I feel like our listeners are bonded to us in a way that other Saints podcasts are not. Maybe it's because we give too much information or like the Saints a little too much that makes it unhealthy. But our fans that listen to the show are fantastic. And fans like you that donate a significant amount of money, it means the world. It means the world to us, and I hope that this experience that you've had with me tonight, for I told you I was going to take 30 minutes, we've done like 2 hours. I hope it's been at least partially what you desired.
Well, Ralph, I have to tell you, I'm very, very disappointed in this experience. No,
you thought it was going to be. You thought it was going to be serious sports talk. You thought it was going to be serious Saints history talk.
Yeah, this is just really pissed me off. This has been a total waste of money. Where do I get a credit? I want a credit for my money, Ralph.
You get no credit. That money's been spent, my guy.
No, I enjoy you guys. You and Andrew and Dave and Kevin. It's a great time. It really, you guys do a good job. It's just four guys getting together. Talking Saints, and that's what I enjoy.
All right. That's Jim. Thanks. If you want to be on Drunk History, donate $25 a month. Get in the raffle. This has been Drunk History. Until next time, we'll see you. British lady, take us out.
Thanks to all of our Saints Happy Hour listeners whose donations made Drunk Saints History possible. Until next time, remember, surviving Saints history is hard. That's why God made alcohol.